Hello, everybody, and welcome to this special 1920s episode of The Fourth Leg. We're going to be playing Rolling 20s. I'm a great radio announcer, you can tell, with Black Dragon Dungeon Company.
It also lives in Australia.
Oh, apparently I do. My name is Hunter. I'm your host and editor, and I'm joined by our lovely co-hosts, Joe and Kel. Joe and Kel, say hello.
Hello, Joe and Kel.
You didn't do what I told you this time.
Rebel.
Gotcha. And as I mentioned, we are joined by the creator of Roaring Twenties. Go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about the game, and say hello to our listeners.
Greetings, weary wanderers. It is I, John, from the Black Dragon Dungeon Company. And as Hunter said, today we are playing Roaring Twenties, which is a game I wrote about the 1920s. So Roaring Twenties is a narrative-driven RPG using D4s and tokens. Your session is going to take place over the course of a week in-game time. So you're going to select various classes. At the beginning of the week, you're going to roll a D4 for all of your stats, and that'll determine how many tokens you put on each stat. And during play, you are going to be faced with several challenges. And in order to overcome these challenges, you are going to select the stat that you want to use, subtract one token from that, and roll your D4. This is based off of the Caltrop Core system, so that means that on a roll of 1, not only do you fail, but your situation gets worse. On a roll of 2, you fail. On a roll of 3, you will succeed. And on a roll of 4, you will succeed and things will get better. But if you do not have any tokens on the stat that you wish to use, you have to choose another stat. So a nice little way to make you go through the various stats. For your stats, you have Gumption, Chutzpah, Moxie, Childlike Wonder, the cut of your jib, and a certain je ne sais quoi. And for your classes, sticking with that 1920s theme, we have flappers, mobsters, gamblers, bootleggers, and G-men.
Wonderful. And we already have our characters made up, so we're going to go ahead real quick, introduce them to all of you. We're going to give you a quick little character description, and then we'll get into gameplay. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Wunderbar. I speak great German, in case that pronunciation didn't give it away.
Sehr gut.
I'm sure, yeah.
You're talking to somebody who took like a semester of German, so it, yeah.
My sister studied German for 4 years, and I picked very few things up from that. But anyway, I will go ahead and introduce myself. I will be playing the G-Man, which is the fuzz, the cops, the G-Men, as the name goes. I will be playing Officer David Matthews. You can call him Dave.
Dave ain't here, man.
Please tell me he has a band.
He wants to, but unfortunately, he's not very good at music. He just really appreciates the craft. Kind of like the real Dave Matthews.
Oh,
you monster.
Jokes aside, I need to get one fandom mad at me every episode. It's contractually obligated.
And he had to pick a new fight this time instead of, you know, just digging in at the Chicagoans again.
Yeah.
Putting ketchup on my hot dogs and whatnot. So Officer Matthews is a 32-year-old man. You know, he's been an adult for a little while, but hasn't quite reached middle age yet. He's been on the force since he was about 22, doing it for about a decade at this point, and really all he wants to do secretly is run a bar where he can listen to jazz music all day, every day. But because of his obligations to the force, he isn't really able to be seen in dive bars like that. You know, the 20s, that's kind of poor people music, and he can't be a part of that. He's an officer of the law. He's a pale-skinned individual. You see a little bit of wrinkles showing up on the edges of his eyes, some salt and pepper in his dark hair, and he dresses you know, like a 1920s officer would, you know, typically in a three-piece suit with the jacket left in the car unless it's kind of cold outside. And he's, of course, got the wide-brim fedora on almost all the time.
Flawless.
Absolutely beautiful. He's not going to talk like that because I don't want to offend the entirety of New York. But that is Officer David Matthews. Joe or Kelsey, take the floor. Who are you playing?
Who wants to go? Who wants to go? Who wants to go?
I don't know. You're talking, so I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
you psyched yourself out on that one.
Yeah, good, because I'm really excited to introduce. Hi, I'm not afraid to offend the entire Eastern board. I'm going to be talking like this. You can call me Mabel. I go by my first name. I'm a flapper. I like going to the clubs and listening to the jazz. One of these days, I'm going to get up on that stage and I'm going to perform as Stella LaGuardia, star extraordinaire. If you ask anybody, though, please don't ask Mabel to sing.
Well, now this has to happen.
So, yeah, Mabel is a, very young. She's just gotten out of her late teens, so she's, like, 20, 21. So, like, even if she weren't of legal age, though, she would definitely still be going out to speakeasies and drinking. Loves dressing up in, like, the very artistic bohemian dress, but she does have the, you know, the go-to flapper dresses. I just recently read Hotbed, which was all about, like, the artistic movements of the 1910s and 20s in Greenwich Village. So I'm just picturing, like, the women who are wearing these, like, big, flowy tops, like, tunic dresses. So sometimes she will wear that whenever she's not going to the clubs. But when she's going to the club, she is, of course, in the sleekest little flapper dress with the little tassels at the bottom and like a big feather hat. She's gotta make a statement anywhere that she goes.
Gotta be the first thing anyone notices when they walk in the room.
Absolutely.
I love it. Alright, Joe.
So I am playing Danny Whip Matthews. I am playing the gambler. He is a younger guy in his like mid-20s. Who has come to the big city to try and make his fortune at cards and dice. As a younger guy, his clothes don't really fit super well. They're probably hand-me-downs. When he's out and about, his suit probably hangs a little loose on him. He's kind of reed thin, probably, you know, just under like 5'9", 5'10", just under 6 foot. Brown hair, kind of slicked back. When he's gambling, he usually doesn't have the coat, and his sleeves are rolled back because he's on one usually. But he is trying to hit it big.
All right, lovely. And now I suppose we will turn the microphone over to you, John. Why don't you tell us what these lovely characters are going to be doing today?
Real fast. Kel, you were saying you wanted this set in Chicago?
I had made the suggestion. We don't have to, but that was a direction I was thinking of, yeah.
Okay. That's too easy.
Fair enough.
there's a reason why it's the big city. It doesn't necessarily have to be East Coast. It's the middle of the 1920s. Prohibition is going strong, but the booze still flows through the streets just as easily as the jazz wafts through the air on broken radios. It is Sunday, and you all have awoken from whatever various state of hangover or excitement you had from the previous week. The trains rattle along their elevated tracks, carrying the Sunday shopping crowds to and fro. The sound of industry and construction fills the air, despite being a day of rest. Chicago doesn't know such things. This is a city booming with industry. This is a city experiencing the height of its power and influence as the stocks roll in and the skyscrapers grow up. In the shadows of it all, the speakeasies and the dive bars and the families who control the supply all vie for their own level of power. But for y'all, you know that a new club is going to be opening up on Friday. This is going to be an exclusive club. This is going to be one of the more prominent families. So the rumors go. Dave, you know that through your contacts in the Force, that there's been a lot of planning going into this. There's been a lot of indications of movement on shipments to provide the appropriate stock for this. Danny, what you understand is that this is going to be the new den of sin and decadence and cards and dice. And Mabel, of course, you understand that with any new club comes new opportunities and new chances for stars to rise and be discovered.
Finally, my chance to shine.
Again, it is Sunday. You all have the remainder of this week to prepare yourselves and try to find a way to get an invite into this location.
So I think I have an idea up front. I think that Officer Matthews has been put on a case investigating a really brutal shooting that happened in an underground speakeasy. Looks like a mob hit. Real nasty stuff. Looks like everybody tore each other limb from limb. And he's been investigating this case. It happened just a few nights ago on Friday night. And the detectives on the case basically give him the job of going over to some suspected mafia contacts and trying to get something out of them. And I think that one of the things that they want him to do is get essentially an invite from one of them as like a show of good faith to this new club opening, because there might be some connection between the mafia and that particular club that's opening up.
Okay. Hold that thought. Mabel, Danny, first of all, do y'all know each other? Do the three of you know each other?
I don't think so.
All right. Outstanding. So let's go ahead and go over to Mabel.
Okay.
As you're the next one in line on my screen.
Okay.
Mabel, what are you doing this Sunday to prepare yourself for trying to locate this club?
Okay, so I'm going to head over to this new art gallery show opening. There's this artist I really like. His name's Farisi. He's got these like oil pastel illustrations that he just does really good work on. I'm going to head on over there because everybody who is anybody in the artistic club scene is going to be hanging out and talking it up with Farisi. So I'm going to head on over there and I'm going to start chatting up everybody and saying, hi, do you know about this new club that's opening up? And if there's any openings for talents, maybe?
Bat eyelashes furiously.
All right. That feels like you're trying to use some of your childlike wonder to get some information.
Yes, which, as a flapper, I have unlimited use of.
Outstanding. So why don't you go ahead and give me a childlike wonder roll?
Okay, so that's a D4. First roll of the session, y'all. Let's see how this goes.
Ooh la la.
This can only go well.
I shit you not, I got a 4.
There you
Outstanding.
Go.
Outstanding. So while you're wandering around this art gallery and chatting up some of the people, you come across a well-dressed man. He has a very nice suit on. His hair is immaculately placed.
You gotta appreciate a good coif.
Yes, a wonderful coif. And he is he's got two other large men surrounding him, but as you're going around, flittering around between person to person, he catches your eye and he kind of waves you over. Hey there, dollface. Understand that you're trying to find yourself a little action this weekend. Is that what it sounds like?
Yes, that is exactly what it sounds like. What might I ask is your name?
For now, you can just call me Joe.
Joe. Well, it is so nice to meet you, Joe. I'm Mabel. It is such a pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you. And he'll take your hand and give it a little kiss.
Oh, you flatterer. Yes, I am looking for a brand new place to show off my talents, as it were. I am quite the singer, in case you did not know.
A singer, eh?
Yes, and if you're looking for a new singer at this new club that's opening up this weekend, I would be more than happy to perform on your stage if there's any kind of space in your roster for some new talent.
Bat's eyelashes.
Here's the deal, doll. How about you stick around with me for a couple days? We get you a couple auditions, and we see if you have what it takes for this new endeavor. And would you say the artist's name was Fabrizio?
the artist with the oil pastel yes. paintings, Farisi.
Farisi. All right. Mm-hmm. And you see Joe wave his hand. Hey, Farisi, come over here, boy. I want you to meet my new friend Mabel. She's gonna be doing a little bit of entertaining at tonight's event. Call it a, we'll go ahead and call that a audition, if you will. So, Mabel, you make sure you get yourself nice and gussied up, and you come back here by, you come back here by 6 o'clock for the after party.
All right, I will be here at least 1:45, just to make sure.
Don't go too early on this. We run on Chicago time out here, so.
Oh, that is true. All right, but I am definitely going to be coming over by at least 6. That just sounds terrific.
And with that, we will cut over to Danny.
Yeah, so Whip is probably going to look for somebody with more money than sense, as they are likely to have an invite, and if he wants to go sit down at the big tables, he's gonna have to have some bankroll behind him. So he's probably going to try and like skim his way into a game with one of these guys and come home with an invite at the bare minimum, if not build up a little bit of a back stack to take with him.
Danny, why don't you go ahead and give me a gumption roll?
Sure. As a gambler, that is something I have in unlimited supply. So that is a 4.
That's Whoa, another 4. Outstanding. Damn. Outstanding.
Marvelous.
Oh, this is not boding well for my luck.
That's right. You can't see it in my green die on my blue it's tray, fine. But it's there.
That is a delightful dice tray.
So, Danny, would it be fair to say that you normally find yourself engaged in some type of game every day?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. We're going to say that you are in one of your favorite halls and you're chatting with some, you're chatting with some people about the new club as you guys are playing cards. And everybody there is kind of lamenting the fact that, yeah, this is going to be the hot new ticket, but nobody knows the right people in order to get in. But one of your compatriots that you're playing with feels particularly lucky about his hand. And, just because you've been playing long enough with him this evening, that at best, this guy has 3 of a kind. At best, probably only has a pair, but he's probably like holding on to that pair being high enough to carry the day. Mm-hmm. But at best, it's no more than a 3 of a kind. And you are sitting on the full house. And so you're slow playing him, you're slow playing him. And as you guys are all talking back and forth, he does mention that he doesn't know anybody who can get into this new club when it opens up, but he did have himself an invitation to some after party at an art gallery this evening. And during the course of the slow play, he bets that invitation and spends a lot of time trying to justify how, oh yeah, no, this is totally worth covering the bet, blah 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 blah. But you know, again, you sitting on your full house, you know that regardless of whatever he's claiming the value of this invitation is, you have him beat. So you just, it's an easy call for you. Cards come over. Guy just had a pair of jacks. It wasn't even that good of a pair. And you end up winning the invitation.
Well, that's why they call me a whip. My mom always said I was smart as a whip. And he kind of scoops up the pile and, well, maybe next time, pal.
So jumping back up to Dave, you are called into your captain's office. You know, again, it's Sunday afternoon still, but you're on the detective track. So you're called back into your captain's office, and he's sitting behind his desk, grumpy, as all police captains are in media. And when you enter, he just offers a sigh. Well, Dave, this damned attack the other day is making the St. Valentine's Day massacre looking like a Thanksgiving fight.
Well, it might as well been after what we've seen today.
Look, we have to get some type of information on this. Now, don't ask me how I got this, all right? But word has it that some of the family has been sponsoring some newfangled artist just opened on the gallery downtown, you know. And whenever you get enough wealthy people and family and all that together for some type of social event, well, there's always going to be some type of after party that's going to have some type of connections. Now, right now, we are not interested in the booze that we know is going to be there tonight. We're not interested in that. That is not what we're trying to do. We are trying to find more information out about the families involved in this massacre. You know, we're trying to find the back alley butcher, as the paper started calling him. So I need you to go there tonight, all right? Make sure you dress up nice.
I'll have the wife pick out the outfit for me, boss. Won't have trouble.
No, you better do more than have the wife pick out the outfit. Look, they're gonna spot you for a G-man as soon as you walk in, but the unfortunate thing is there are enough G-men on the take that, you know, nobody's gonna think too much of it. Make sure that you look good enough to look like you are on the take.
I'll look the part, boss. Just, I haven't had whiskey in 3 years since old man Wilson passed that prohibition law, so expect me to partake just a little bit. And he's going to give him a little bit of a wink.
Good, good. Make sure that you fit in, because we can turn a blind eye to a lot of things around here, but once that blood starts flowing, you know, then the papers get involved, it gets sensational, the mobs start forming. The people mobs, not the family mobs. And, you know, we can't have that. You know, we're not looking for another gang war in these cities. So, and he slides you the invitation. So make sure you're there. Make sure that you start finding what you can find.
Got it, boss. Only thing flowing will be information. He's going to kind of tip his hat a little bit, turn on his heel, grab his coat from the back of the chair, and then fling it over his shoulder and walk out of the captain's office and start sweating internally because he does not have a suit nice enough for this moment.
So, is there anything you guys want to do leading up to this party?
I want to get a good suit.
Oh, I'm gonna be figuring out my nicest outfit so I can be Stella LaGuardia for tonight's performance, giving it a kind of a test run.
All right. So, Officer Matthews, it sounds like you have a little bit of a challenge. You need to find yourself a decent enough suit for tonight.
I think he's going to call up his friend, his good buddy from high school. They were on the football team together. Dave was a linebacker, and this guy was a wide receiver. So they practiced against one another all the time. His name's Jerry Springfield, and he's going to call up Jerry and be like, "Jerry, you are always way better dressed than me, buddy. I really need you to help me out here. I need a suit for a party tonight. And I mean a good suit for a party tonight."
That's kind of tall order coming there so fast there, Dave. Now, old Jerry's going to be able to take care of you. Don't you worry about that. Old Jerry's going to take care of you, and we're going to get you right. It's just, like I said, it's a tall order, so I might have to call in a couple favors of my own. So the question now becomes, how important is this?
Well, can we keep this between friends, Jerry?
Of course, of course.
Well, you know, I've got my lady, and we've got our two. And, you know, there's this really nice party, and I need to get in the door so that, you know, with the lady not around, I can relax a little bit. So, you know, my line of work is pretty steep, pretty demanding, and the lady's nagging my ear off whenever I get home, as soon as I walk in, and I gotta make ends meet, personally, on a personal level, you know?
All right, why don't you go ahead and choose a stat and give me a roll? So let me know what stats you're choosing and how you think that plays into this particular situation.
So I'm trying to lean into chutzpah, which is, as described by the book, self-confidence and presenting yourself in a way where you belong wherever you are. And the way that I'm playing into that is David Matthews is a very loyal husband. He loves his wife. He would never even imagine cheating on her. But he knows that Jerry is a bit of a playboy. And he knows that Jerry will sympathize with this, you know, get away from the wife and have a little fun kind of mindset, even though that's not at all what Dave is trying to do.
All right. Go ahead and give me a roll.
3.
Hey, not bad.
All right.
That is better than I expected, knowing my luck.
Well, Dave, when you put it like that, I understand. Dames, Dave, what can I say? There's a reason why I only keep mine around for about a week.
Well, there's a part of me that's envious of you, friend.
Are you at his apartment, or?
I imagine I called him up and we're out getting a coffee or something.
Okay.
A coffee.
You're rubbing off on me,
Joe. You're welcome.
All right. Yeah, why don't you come on back to my apartment and we'll see what we can do to get you all fixed up there, Dave. And so Jerry will lead you back to his apartment. You know, a nice sprawling affair. He managed to translate his football success in high school to moderate success in college, and opened up a lot of connections for him to create a very comfortable lifestyle for himself. So takes you into his walk-in closet, finds you a good suit. Now, of course, it's not top of the line or anything like that, but definitely looks better than what a G-man should be able to afford on their salary, especially if they got a family at home. So now that you are all properly attired, let us go ahead and skip forward to the party. You guys have all arrived at various times, but you guys are all at the gallery mingling around with local politicians, local stars, that sort of thing. And then, of course, interspersed throughout the rest of this party, you see large looking men just standing in the corners or along the sides of the room, their hard gazes just kind of overlooking the crowds. There are a couple tables set up in the middle of the gallery where you have some professional looking car dealers sitting there dealing various, you know, you got a blackjack table, a poker table. Somebody pulled out a roulette table. You know, you got a nice little casino running in the middle of the gallery as well.
Like you do.
I mean,
pull out my roulette table from in my back pocket. Whoop.
I mean, again, judging from the looks of the security in the place and the looks of the people who are running around or who are walking around, because they don't need to move fast for anybody, you know that this is a connected event. And you know that anytime a connected event happens, that certain activities become more common, such as the champagne and whiskey that is just being openly displayed and served by waiters, the small casino in the middle of the room, that sort of thing.
I think that Officer Matthews is going to go up to the bar because he enjoys alcohol quite a bit. But with Prohibition coming around in the very, very early 20s, it's about the mid 20s now, he's really itching for just a little something to take the edge off. And even though he was kind of joking around with the captain, he was dead serious when he said he was going to have a few when the opportunity presented itself. So he's going to walk up. He's going to kind of lean on the bar, flag down the barkeep. He's going to go, can you make a sidecar?
Bartender just nods, goes off, makes the drink, sets it in front of you, and then turns away to go help another guest. Does it, like, there's no request for payment or anything like that. There is just a jar in the middle of the bar for tips.
He is going to take a very deep drink and just kind of do that classic, and kind of like look up at the sky, like, this is what I've needed in my life. And he's going to go ahead, God, it's the 1920s, so I guess he's just going to take a single out of his wallet and slip it in the tip jar and turn around and start looking around in the crowd for somebody who might he might be able to tag for info.
All right, what about Mabel or Whip? What are you guys doing? And no, this is not me providing you guys an opportunity to get together.
I arrive at 6 o'clock on the dot, which is early for Mabel. She's talking with the pianist and the drummer and making sure that they know the songs that she wants to perform for that night's session, getting that squared away. She's also maybe wanting to keep an eye out for Mr. Joe, who made her the connection tonight, to thank him again personally.
Okay. Yep. So you show up, you're chatting with some people. You kind of see Joe like walking around, but he's surrounded by several important looking people at the time. So it's not like a great time to go walking up to him. Unless you're the type who's like, oh, I don't particularly care who he's with.
I mean, Mabel is not smart. She's not book smart, but she knows how to read the room. So she's just going to be like, okay, doll, you're busy, so I'm going to go talk it up with some of these other people. And she's going to just mingle for a bit before any kind of performance. She's probably going to perform right around 7 o'clock, a full hour later than was promised.
Sounds about right.
Yep.
Whip, what are you doing?
So I think Whip is at the tables, but I think the goal, rather than like clean them out, is to like grab some attention, because either he does win some and some of these connected guys are going to want him at this party to get their money back, or alternatively he can get in with one of these politicians who's honestly pretty bad at gambling, as like, oh yeah, well, you're a professional gambler, like, you could teach me this and that, and he could score an invitation off of one of them.
All right, That feels like a role. What do you think that would be?
I was thinking him trying to kind of be the center of attention. That would be maybe like childlike wonder.
Okay.
As kind of that, like, I'm not necessarily good at gambling right now. Like, look at me, I'm Tony Stark, center of attention, kind of like, oh, you're going to want me at your party.
Okay. Yep, go ahead and give me a childlike wonder roll.
Okay. Let me grab this one. That is a 2.
All right, so with that 2, the cards are definitely not in your favor right now. Not only are you having difficulty maintaining that center of attention that you want, because, like, at the end of the day, like, you are surrounded by local stars and personalities and everything. Like, it's a case of, hey, who is this guy? You know, and then on top of that, you're not even really winning. So, you know, you go down a little bit in your monies, and you're just overall having a general bit of difficulty.
Hopefully you're not dropping a couple of C's. That would just be a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of the other problem with it is, you know, yeah, you're a professional gambler, but the pockets at these tables are so much deeper than what you're used to that, like, even when you get a chance to make a big move, it's not that big of a move. So, you're not getting cleaned out, but you are barely treading water at this point. Let's go ahead and jump back up to Mabel.
Mm-hmm.
What type of role do you envision your performance being?
I'm going to take a look again at the stats. I know I read them earlier, but I just want to refresh.
Yeah. So childlike wonder is definitely in the entertain or entrance category. However, I know that you have some other motives for this performance that I will allow you to attempt.
Ooh, okay. You know, I think this one actually might be more of a moxie. Like, with her, what she wants to do right now is she wants to put on a performance of, do not ignore me. I am the most charismatic person in this room, and you need to pay attention to me. And I feel like that would be a lot of moxie.
Okay. Very, very, what was the mobster's girlfriend name from Victor Victoria?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, goodness.
You know the one I'm talking about, though.
I actually have not seen Victor Victoria, but...
All right, so go sort your life out after this.
I gotta do that. I know. I'm so uncultured. Okay, so Moxie, which I have unlimited use of. I'm going to use this one because it rolled really well last time. That's another 4.
That's all right. Outstanding. Yeah, so the music starts and you designed your set in a very particular way. The piano comes in with a nice little arpeggio, just running up the notes before the bass starts to plunk a very almost husky, seductive bass line.
Ooh.
And you come out and you start out with a very sensual, like a very sensual, look at me, I am the sexiest thing here song.
Like there was any doubt.
And at the conclusion of that, completely surprising everyone around you, just according to plan, all of a sudden the drummer does a rapid count off on their sticks before a very upbeat, very jazzy tune kicks in and you start leading into that. So, you know, you go very Jessica Rabbit to one of the show numbers from Chicago. in very rapid succession. And
I like it. I like it.
Yeah. And this does manage to capture everybody's attention. Everybody is very impressed. There's a lot of hooting and hollering, a lot of catcalls, a lot of wolf whistles during the opening song, followed by a lot of cheers and people starting to dance during the second song. You do another song or two like that before going off to take your break. And the band continues to play another jazzy number, keeping the energy up. And you feel an arm around your waist as Joe pulls you against them.
Oh.
Well, doll, I can't say I wasn't expecting that level of performance.
Oh, well, are you saying that you underestimated me, sir?
Oh, I'm saying I didn't properly evaluate you. You have two great virtues that I could see right up front. You know, the voice is just a bonus. I do think that we are going to have a wonderful opportunity here if you can maintain this level of energy and performance.
Oh, I have no doubt that I can do such a thing, my good sir.
Outstanding, outstanding. So jumping back over to Dave and Whip. Once the music starts up, are you guys continuing to mingle, look for marks, or what are you guys doing?
I think that Dave notices Whip kind of losing out a little bit and come up and kind of clap him on the shoulder and be like, "That's all right there, bud. You can't win them all, right?"
Well, if you could, the house wouldn't play.
Exactly my point. You know, I've always been a little more interested in playing cards and throwing dice down in these lesser-known venues. You know, places where not everybody knows your face. You know what I'm saying?
I'm aware of a thing or two.
It's not very subtle.
Do I know you?
One of the great things about... Oh, no. Sorry. Nice to meet you. I'm, name's David. David Matthews. Go by Dave.
Huh. I'm, Whip. Whip Matthews. And he kind of, like, looks a little perplexed.
Dave will also look at you a little weirdly, be like, "You think we're related or something?"
I hope not.
Where are you from?
Ohio, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That is the correct response.
Well, you know, there's a reason I left town.
Yeah, well, you made a good choice coming out here to the Windy City, Chi-town. How you take your hot dogs? He's gonna look at you like very intently as he asks this question.
One bite at a time, usually. Why?
He'll ponder you for a moment and then go, "A good enough response, I suppose." He'll take another sip of his drink. You see that his cheeks are getting just a little bit rosy. He hasn't had alcohol in a long time, and so he's already feeling it towards the bottom of his first glass. He goes, "Well, I suppose one good thing about being in a place like this, people like us, at least we don't have to deal with, he's gonna look around, kind of drop his voice a little bit, "Nothing like the back alley butcher, you know?"
Yeah, I mean, I hope not. I mean, I'm not really interested in any of those kind of messes.
So what Dave is going to attempt to do from this point out, since he's kind of clocking that Whip doesn't really know anything about this particular massacre, is he's going to attempt to speak just loud enough that somebody else nearby is able to react to it. So I don't know what that would fit into, but I'm hoping to play into like childlike wonder, bring just enough attention to himself that other people might like perk up and he can clock them as somebody who might know something.
It might help if you speak up a little louder, like, "I'm here to investigate the back alley butcher."
I'm a cop, if it's not obvious.
I was gonna say, every bit of your interaction with people is like, "I'm not a cop, I promise I'm not a cop."
I bet your favorite Ninja Turtle is Leonardo. Fucking cops.
So So I'm going to say what you're trying to do honestly feels more like chutzpah. Okay.
I'm cool with that. I shall roll. Oof. That's only a 2.
Welcome to party, friend.
I swear I'm not a cop.
The first fail.
He says as he puts his badge away in his coat.
He's like, I'm not a... You see this badge? This does not describe me.
So, with that 2, you don't get any reaction that you're looking for. You get, like, a couple people just kind of glance over at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, annoyed looks on their face, like, yo, who is this asshole? But nothing that would indicate any type of information that you're seeking. But luckily for you, it's just like the surrounding people who are annoyed. There doesn't seem to be any change to the overall feel of the place or anything like that. Like, security isn't paying you any more attention. Dave, I will let you know though that as Mabel finishes up her singing, you recognize Joe. You know Joe is actually Joe Castiglione, who is one of the prominent members of one of the prominent families in Chicago. So you do recognize Joe as that. And with that, if you want, you can, recognizing Joe Castiglione, you could make a gumption roll and see if that sparks any more recognitions throughout the room.
I only have 1 token for gumption. Is this the worth it roll?
Test it.
How many do you have for je ne sais quoi?
Je ne sais quoi, I have 3. You know what? Fuck it. Let's roll our gumption. Just blow on the dice a little bit. I shouldn't have done that. That's a 1.
Oh boy.
Oh no.
And I don't have any more gumption.
what about a certain je ne sais quoi?
So I will let you use one. I will let you use one of your je ne sais quoi.
Sure.
Because remember, je ne sais quoi lets you add a dice to any of your other rolls.
Okay, so that would let me re-roll?
Basically it would let you re-roll.
Okay. It gives you advantage. Basically, you roll 2 and take the best.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, let's see.
Double 1?
So the good news is it's not a 1.
Oh.
It's a 2? All right. If you want to go one more time, I'm sure you can get a success.
Yeah.
No.
Fuck it. We're gambling. Why not?
No.
Oh, man.
I'm kidding. Oh. I'm kidding. You don't need to do that.
Oh, that would have been funny, though.
I'm very easy to peer pressure when it comes to RPGs.
I'm going to keep that nugget in the back of my mind.
Look, you still have 6 days to go.
Very true.
You don't want to spend all your fate in one spot. You recognize Joe because Joe is a prominent figure, and everybody in your division knows Joe. I don't know. Maybe it's the alcohol. Maybe it's the intoxicating atmosphere. You know. Maybe it's Mabel. But
it's Mabel.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. There we go. But like you can't really pick anybody else out.
I think that with this, Dave is going to look back to Whip and be like, well, sorry for taking up your time. Best of luck to the, the rest of your roles. And he'll go ahead and he'll hold out his glass for a quick cheers.
Whip will kind of oblige him and then promptly turn around to the blackjack table like, I don't know that guy.
I don't know him. Yeah, we have the same last name. We're not related.
All right, Mabel. Ooh-hoo. Jumping back over to you, after a little bit of a friendly conversation with Joe, and some slightly veiled innuendos and whatnot, Joe, yeah, you know, Joe is going, you know, Joe's going to give you a little bit of a squeeze and hand you a small wad of bills.
Ooh, do they look legit?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Dahl, seems you got a little bit of a, seems you still have a little bit of a break on your performance for tonight. What do you say we see how lucky you are in other regards?
You know what? I think I might just have to take you up on that offer if you're handing me some of these seeds here. Let's see if we can get a little bit more.
So as you make your way to the gambling table, like, it's not an insignificant sum, but, you know, it's also not like, you know, you can tell it's not what he would gamble with. This is, mm-hmm. you know, this is like maybe 50
Here's
bucks.
Here's some Monopoly yeah. money, kid. Have
yeah,
fun. Which,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
you know, which is, which $50 still good for the mm-hmm. time period.
Oh, yeah.
And depending on what circles you have run in prior to this, you can kind of pick up that he's trying to impress you a little bit, but he's also not giving money that he's worried about losing.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah. I was able to.
It's one of those. If you can turn this $50 into something, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, great. But if not, you know,
yeah,
he's making an investment for later tonight.
Sure.
Or this week.
Yeah, yeah. He's already made an investment in me and letting me perform. So this is just, you know, fun monies. Let's see if we can turn this fun monies into a little bit more fun. Basically.
So yeah, I'm gonna go up to one of the card tables, maybe one that Whip has walked up to after being like, I don't know that guy, and I just kind of sidle up to him and get the dealer to deal me into the game.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll say that you walked up like right as Dave walked away.
Yeah. Just kind of. Walk on up. Don't make any idle chit-chat quite yet. I kind of want to see how my luck goes. What would I use for, like, a gambling roll?
For blackjack. We'll say blackjack is more along the gumption route.
Okay.
If it was poker, I'd let you use, like, chutzpah or childlike wonder because, you know, poker is as much playing the other person as it is your cards.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, blackjack, a lot more problem-solving oriented.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't bluff your 25 points into being
yeah,
a blackjack.
Exactly. I don't have a ton of points in gumption, but I'll go ahead and give it a try anyway. So we're going to roll for gumption here. Let me take a token out of gumption. I'm using that now, and... I am keeping this dice.
This is the one, apparently.
This is the one. It's another 4.
Why don't you send it here?
All right.
I'll take care of it for you. Hunter could use some help also.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you send it to Hunter? Because Dave is working on getting himself thrown out.
Or killed. Yes. Depending on how many more times he flashes his badge.
Probably killed.
So yeah, with that 4, you were having a great time at that table. You know, yeah, you lose a couple of hands and whatnot, but all in all, you were continuing to make money. You have you doubled and then quadrupled the money that that Joe is giving you, and you have also you've also drawn yourself quite the little crowd as well as.
Like I always do wherever I go.
Yes, yes. You have quite the assortment of people who are surrounding you and now trying to get your attention because not only did you impress everybody with your performance, but everybody saw you with Joe and now you're winning at the blackjack. Like, it has become obvious to the party that you are the person to impress right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Always am, always will be. Thank you for noticing, everybody. Happy to be here.
So I think Whip is going to try to, like, bleed off this crowd a little bit and try to play up, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm her coach. You know, I'm a professional gambler. Like, I'm teaching her to try and, like, snag somebody off the side and kind of use their energy, excitement.
All right, Whip, why don't you go ahead and give me a chutzpah?
That will be my first of three.
Ooh.
That's a one.
Would you like to use any of your je ne sais quoi?
No, I will be hanging on to them. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. So Whip, you're sitting next to Mabel, and you're like, oh yeah, no. That's a soft 14. You should totally hit on that. The dealer has a hard 16, so they have to stay. But you know, but you're just off on everything. And Mabel, I will let you play out how you react to the bad advice.
She's a classy lady. She's or at least she likes to think that she is classy. So anytime that he tries to pitch some advice, I don't say anything quite right away. And then whenever I'm winning hands, I'm just like, oh, it just must be beginner's luck. My goodness. And that's the only comment that I'm going to make about that.
All right. Whip, unfortunately for you, though, as Mabel continues to attract attention, your attempts at advice also attract attention, and you feel a hand on your shoulder as one of the security looks to you, Mabel.
Ooh.
Mr. Castiglione wanted me to make sure that this gentleman wasn't bothering you, ma'am.
Oh, Adol, I very much appreciate it. No, this cat's not bothering me. We're okay right now. But thank you for checking in on me. You're so sweet.
He's going to give you a nod, Mabel, and Whip, you're going to feel a tightening on your shoulder. Just a, you know, just a friendly little...
We're watching you.
Yeah. Stop fucking up. Yeah, you know. Before the hand releases itself and you guys are returned to your game. We will say that the rest of the evening continues on like that. And the party eventually winds its way down. Mabel, you have made quite the splash, quite the name for yourself.
Always do, doll.
You know, Joe is very pleased with you. Dave, unfortunately, you weren't able to really gather anything. But you know, it was not a completely wasted evening. I mean, you got a couple drinks out of it and, you know, had yourself a good time. Whip, unfortunately, it seems like you had the roughest go tonight. Whip, give me a gumption roll, please.
Sure. That is also a 2.
All right. Yeah. So Whip, you definitely had a rough go tonight. And as you are walking out, you get the feeling that while you're not outright blacklisted, nobody's gonna like throw you out if you show up to another party like this. You're gonna have an eye kept on you.
Yeah, his name is on the watch list.
Yeah. You're not being blackballed, but you know you're not. Nobody's co-signing on you either.
Mm-hmm.
And that will conclude your Sunday evening.
All right, and welcome back. So we just finished up, probably about 15, 20 minutes ago, real time, just finished up our quick demo of Roaring Twenties, and now we're going to get into our Q&A. But before we do that, there was something missing from this episode. What was it? I can taste it on the tip of my tongue.
Something about favorites, I think.
Maybe
something fun. I don't know. I mean, I had a little bit of fun playing, but there's gotta be something else.
Fun, a favorite, maybe a...
The fact of the matter is, you're gonna have to remember what it is.
Fun, favorite, fact?
Oh.
Our
yeah,
fun fact.
The fun fact.
Oh, how could we miss it? The fun fact for today is going to be, what is your favorite mafia mobster inspired media? And this could be, you know, an instance of a mafia organization in a show that you like, or a movie about the mafia, or a character that is involved with mafia or is a quintessential mobster. And I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to invite the best roles of the night, Kel themselves, our resident flapper, to kick us off. Who's your favorite mobster in media?
Ooh, okay. So actually, I'm going to go with my favorite presentation of, like, mob media in general. And this, generally, I actually don't like mafia stories or, like, mob stories. But I will say, ever since I saw that one tabletop show hosted by Will Wheaton, they did an episode about the game Fiasco, and they did a playthrough of it, and watching that playthrough made me go, oh my god, I want to play this game so bad. Still haven't gotten around to it, but
it's a blast.
Yeah, but that show, that it's basically like if a mafia movie was directed by the Coen brothers, that's what that session was. It was so much fun to watch. I had a lot of fun watching it. It was great.
I want to say it was like Saturday Night 78 or Saturday Night 76, but it is actually a playset that Will Wheaton wrote for Fiasco. It was a lot of fun.
I think it was Saturday Night 76, something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, that one's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Joe or John, take it away.
So my problem with favorite questions is because it's hard for me to choose actual favorites. But like, talking about favorite mob portrayals, it's hard not to bring up the OG, probably one of the best mob movies ever, and that's going to be Godfather.
Yeah.
That was amazing. I also really love Road to Perdition,
yes,
the movie, because I haven't read the comic book. But, like, that one is also, like, super depressing. But, like, it's, if there's one that I both thoroughly enjoy and can watch on a regular basis, it would have to be Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Goodfellas is a good one.
Always a good option. I mean, an iconic opening. I mean, probably the most iconic opening of any mob movie, you know. Ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a gangster. Incredible.
Is that what that's from?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how Goodfellas opens up.
This shows how absolutely uncultured I am. I had no idea.
Oh, man. So they got an all-star cast, too. Oh, yeah. Pesci, Ray Liotta, De Niro.
Okay.
Paul Sorvino.
Yeah.
That's one of those movies that, like, you can trace really successful careers that started from that film, and there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
So Galaxy Quest is another one that launched a lot of careers. I mean, you could name
or Sank One. You know,
I was about to say, if you were going to recommend Galaxy Quest as a mafia movie, I'm like, oh,
no,
connection.
It was just
unless you consider Hollywood a mob.
It's like six degrees of separation of genre. Tell me how you connect the bridge.
not as a gangster movie, but as like a launcher movie that started a lot of careers.
Okay, yeah.
Like Sigourney Weaver wasn't at all famous before Galaxy Quest.
Sam Rockwell, I think, was in that.
He was.
And he hit it pretty big.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, Sam Rockwell was, like, probably, and even he had a decent career up until that point, too. But, like, everybody else, like, Alan Rickman was, like,
Tony Shalhoub
was already doing good. Tony Shalhoub. Like, Tony Shalhoub was already good.
He was Monk, I think, at that point.
I think it was a little
after. Was he Monk by that point?
It might have been right before. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
no,
yeah.
He'd already had a very, he'd already been very successful on Wings.
Yeah. But then you have careers starting out for, like, Justin Long and a bunch of the side characters that had really didn't have a lot of credits before then. And then they got launched from Galaxy Quest. Anywho, Joe, if you want to go next, I can bring up the rear.
Sure. So obviously Godfather Part 2 specifically is really great because it has kind of the split storytelling. that's honestly part of the book that they couldn't really jam into the first 3 hours of the first movie. But my current favorite right now is it's an anime called 91 Days. It's a 12 episode series, and it's set in Italy. That basically this bookkeeper was killed by the family because they were worried he might unveil some secrets. And one of his sons comes back and has changed his name and is pretending to be a hitter. And he is infiltrating the family and bringing justice to the people that had wronged his family. It's definitely great. 12 episodes. It's pretty quick watch. Definitely recommend it.
Lovely.
Dope. I'm going to have to check that out.
So there is one that I want to call out that I've been watching recently, which is Bungo Stray Dogs. That's a name. it's a very good show. It's an anime kind of about these superpowered individuals that work in tandem with the police in order to combat organized crime, right? And the character of Octagawa, who is essentially the foil to the main protagonist, is such a good character, a very nuanced character, that I think does a really good job of showing off the reasons people get into crime and stay in the criminal underworld. But that's not my favorite mobster or like organized crime boss. My favorite is probably Kaiser Soze from The Usual Suspects. Even though we don't see him in charge of any kind of organized crime raids or anything like that, not really, the amount of intelligence that is portrayed by the character of Kaiser Soze and the legend that they build over the course of the film that is, you know, ultimately proven to be true, even if the individual acts or not, I think is just brilliant writing. Understanding Kevin Spacey's problems as an individual, as a human being, he plays the character incredibly well. And just the entire cast of that film nails it, knocks it out of the park. So I think Kaiser Soze is probably my favorite mobster, and The Usual Suspects, even though it's not a traditional mafia movie, is my favorite movie that deals with themes of organized crime. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into our Q&A segment. Joe, you have a few written up already. Why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, so the first question that I had was what inspired you to tie the stat names to old-time themed items instead of like standard names? So, you know, like Dex, Charisma, all that stuff. I mean, we see that a lot in role-playing games.
So, years ago, there was a meme. There was a meme. It listed those six stats. And, you know, one of the, like, it was like a Tumblr screenshot that started getting passed around. And one of the last comments on it was, you know, imagine these stats, you know, imagine these stats in a game or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was amusing. I thought it was whatever. So I saved it, put it in my idea folder. And didn't really think too much of it right up until I first heard about Caltrip Core when Lex from Titan Amaki, mm-hmm. RPG announced Caltrip Core and was like, hey, and they said, hey, this is the new system that I'm creating, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I just started getting into TTRPGs and content creation. Justin and I had just started Black Dragon Dungeon Company about a month or two prior. And I was like, this is a really simple system and opens up a lot of possibilities. And I can do something with this meme now that I've been holding on to for a while.
Which is honestly okay, the cool. best way to use like a Tumblr post that you've had pinned in the back of your mind for the longest time.
Yeah, yeah. So it was one of those, I had the system, I had the meme, and it was just a case of, all right, well, what time frame fits these the best? 1920, so if I'm building a game around, you know, if I'm building a game around the 1920s, you know, let's lean into that roaring 20s aesthetic. So, you know, little bit of Great Gatsby, a little bit of Chicago, a little bit of that whole, like, mix it all together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the stereotypical archetypes of the time. And that's why I went with those as the stats, honestly, is because of a meme. And then it was, okay, cool. I have something the meme would work with. And I built it around that. But that also, like, I don't know if I'm going to end up stealing somebody's question later, but that does end up tying into a lot of my game design. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because all the games I've built, all the games I've released so far, the initial concept was something small scale. Like, I haven't released anything that I'm trying to build a campaign off of yet. I'm trying to build one shot, maybe two shot type games. Yeah. Where, mm-hmm. you know, you're just trying to capture a feel or capture a particular thing.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so Roaring Twenties, I think I did well with on that. Some of my other games, you know, I was just playing with mechanics. So, you know, they end up becoming a lot lighter on story. Trail of Memories was just me trying to play with Carta a little bit, the Carta system mm-hmm. a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'll admit that one is a very weak game, but, you know, not horrible if you're specifically looking for, hey, I kind of want to build finding this lost civilization type thing. But, you know, it ends up becoming more of a supplement to help build out something as opposed to something to sit down and play. Like mm-hmm. Roaring Twenty would be.
Yeah. Well, that I think leads pretty well into my first question. It's mentioned in the actual rule book for Roaring Twenties that it can be run in an extended campaign style in a more Monster of the Week format. What would you say is the life of an extended campaign? Or put another way, how many sessions or hours do you think is ideal if somebody wants to run this for a long-form story?
So I think part of that is going to depend a little bit on what type of mood you're trying to get mm-hmm. with it. And, you know, doing a little bit of planning up front. So, like, today we played for, what, hour and
something
a half?
Something like that.
About, yeah.
Something like that. And the party that you all went to on day one, honestly, that probably should have been, like, a end-of-the-week type thing. That should have been what we were all working towards. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's kind of why I was building the new club opening up, was to lead to something like that. But your characters not having any backstory with each other and, you know, trying to get you guys jump-started in that. It just ended up working out that the attempt at introducing everything worked better for, like, what your week should end mm-hmm. with. But mm-hmm. Similar to Monster of the Week, you know, every week you have just some type of event
yeah.
that y'all are trying to do. And it can be fairly episodic. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that episodic stories can't have overarching storylines and arcs running through them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this was designed to be more episodic, more slice of life, more, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we're not trying to turn Mabel into the toast of the town. Yeah. You know, it's...
Well, everyone but Kel isn't.
Oh, no, she's going to have a villain arc. Just you wait.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, it was designed so that, you know, like, Whip, who ended up having a bad night, didn't make too great of a name for himself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Next week he goes to a different club and has a better night and can, like, start rebuilding his reputation mm-hmm. that way. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. So I would say that realistically, you wouldn't want to do more than two sessions per week.
Yeah.
One session leading up to the big event and then one session for mm-hmm. the event. And then that would be stretching it
yeah.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you have very low usage for your non-unlimited mm-hmm. stats. So it's... You know, one session leading up to big event, and, you know, that big event Like, it could take you all week to get to that. It might just be a one-day thing like we ended up doing. You know, then just however many sessions you want to do after that. Like, personally, I would probably not do more than five or six in a row of this type of thing, because, again, episodic storytelling, it can get very repetitive very quickly. But it's also one of those, if you're using this as like a palate cleanser or just a one-shot thing in your normal campaign, then things can become a little more indefinite in how you use it, because, you know, those little breaks can help out, you know. And with just some minor hacking of the setting, it can also, like, it can also very easily become like a downtime activity for whatever your current game is as well. You know, you just take your character, you kind of throw them into one of those archetypes. Yeah, you're bending things a little bit out of place, but not horribly so. And then you can use it for like downtime activities. You know, the party walks into a new town, and you can use this as like that palate cleanser, downtime reset.
Yeah,
I'm already trying to figure out ways to like hack this into some kind of a college campus variant, but that's also just the campaign that I'm running and being like, how can I wiggle this into there as like a fun break from our usual sessions?
Yeah, I mean, and like that, like that's just really changing the archetypes up a little bit. So defaulting on, yeah, defaulting to like D&D, you know, your flapper would definitely be more of your bard type, your gambler would be more of your rogue type, you know, your G-man would be like your paladin or your paladin or your fighter type. Just borrowing the archetypes and kind of swapping them around a little bit.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too hard, but also it wouldn't be too hard to like take this system and do it as like a fun one shot thing.
Yeah,
just as is.
So like your college campus, again, your players probably built their characters off of some type of stereotype archetype. That you can then plug into these stats, or that you can plug into these things and then just borrow the stats from, you know. So if you, even if you didn't want to change the stat names, then it's still a relatively easy, relatively low threat dive on in. And then the D4 helps out with that as well, because at the end of the day, it's a yes or no answer to any of the challenges. And just a degree of how yes or how no.
Absolutely. Variable success. That's my favorite thing to see in a dice system, personally. All right, Kel, I believe you had a question to roll up with.
Yes, this is something that I noticed right away when looking at the rule book, which was that certain classes have an unlimited use of particular kinds of skills. For the flapper, they had unlimited moxie and childlike wonder, for example. My question was, what prompted you to have certain stats have unlimited tokens for particular classes? Like, what was the thought process behind that?
I wanted to keep everything on a D4. You know, I don't want you to use a D4 for everything, but then when it came to determining your tokens for the week, you know, you had to find a D6 or a D8 or whatever. But again, the loop is kind of based around a week, because I wanted you to go out and like explore the city and attempt to try things and finagle and set things up. And then once you get, you know, and then once you get to the big event, run into a lot of like a lot of challenges that you're going to do during that, you know, like you guys saw. And even in that big event, I think you guys ended up using what, 2, 3, 4 rolls a piece?
Something like that. Yeah.
About, yeah.
So what I didn't want to have happen was I didn't want a player to spend all their resources getting to that big event and then not being able to do anything, you know, because that doesn't seem fun to me where you are trying to get into, like, you're trying to get into this big party at the end of the week, but you rolled kind of poorly for your tokens and you didn't manage to secure an invitation. So now you have to, like, convince the door guard,
mm-hmm.
but you have nothing you can do to convince the door guard because you've used everything up.
Mm.
You know, at that point you have to punch him in the face and hope that you win hope that you win the combat.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you know, if you punch the door guard in the face, you're not exactly getting into the party.
Fight the whole club, why not, right?
Yeah.
Gotcha, suckers.
So the unlimited use on that stuff was to give you something that you could reliably use all the time. Because I'm also a big fan of everybody having some level of reliable talent.
Ooh.
You know, and whether or not that reliable talent, like, translates into a mechanical benefit, because this game doesn't really have mechanical benefits. The closest you have to that is je ne sais quoi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Providing you that extra dice you can roll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just having something that you can constantly fall back on that also fits with the archetype of your character. Again, I didn't want you guys to use up all your resources trying to get to the party. And then you get to the party and it's like, I'm getting to this party to perform for people, but I used up all of my childlike wonder getting to the party. So now I cannot perform.
Yeah, that would have sucked.
Yeah, that doesn't feel fun to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't like building that type of stuff into my games.
Yeah, it also sounds like a ripe recipe for a player trying to negotiate with a DM being like, but it could actually be this stat instead, so I don't have to use this other one.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's fine to a degree, because there's a decent amount of overlap between this stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you know, like, I'm pretty sure I let Kel use Moxie instead of something that probably would have fit a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I know with Joe and Hunter that, you know, I asked you guys how you were trying to influence the situation so that you could determine your roles, because realistically, as people, we have certain skills that we're good at and we're going to find ways to utilize those as much as possible. Like, that's just how we approach things.
Mm-hmm.
So the unlimited was giving you that ability to talk with the GM and be like, but I'm being super cute and like, I'm adorable and look at me, like, let me sashay and shimmy my way in, you know? So there are translations outside of that. You know, if I can bluff somebody at the card table, I can bluff a doorman into letting me in. G-Man, part of the reason they have unlimited with Gumption is, you know, they're trying to track down the mob and, like, all these speakeasies. So they have to look like they belong there. But, you know, part of that being able to look like you belong somewhere and having that authority to understand, you know, having that authority that you belong there can translate into other aspects as well.
Yeah, unless you're Dave Matthews, and then you don't fit in anywhere because you are immediately pegged as a cop.
Not even into the music scene.
Not even into the music scene.
Because we're gonna piss off all the New Yorkers, all the New Jersey people, and anybody who likes Dave Matthews.
especially people who like Dave Matthews. All right, Joe.
Yeah. So you touched on it a little bit when you were talking about, like, the origins of the stat names. What drew you to Caltrop Core as a system? When you had your stat names, and you're like, okay, this is going to be fun, something I want to do, and then you're like, okay, this is the system I want to do it in.
So what drew me to it was just its simplicity. Like I said, at the end of the day, it is a very simple yes/no oracle. With some degrees of success to it, which coming from D&D is something that I was drawn to, because D&D is very binary. You either make the check or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's my least favorite thing about it.
Yeah. And depending on who your DM is, depends on how hard that door shuts when you don't make the check.
Yeah.
Because, you know, It sucks when it's a DC 15 and you roll a 14 and you don't get anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's the end of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. You lose, sir. Good day. And while there's a level of that here, because this is also pretty binary, the degrees of success does allow for more opportunities to pivot, because unless you roll a one on your check, you don't really shut down that option. Okay, I rolled a two. That means that this particular thing doesn't work, but it's not like I'm thrown out. You know, at the same time, hey, I rolled a four, so not only did I accomplish what I want, but I opened up more paths because of that. So, like, when Officer Matthews was trying to be obvious about everything, he failed. He didn't get, like, he didn't generate any reactions with the people around him. He didn't get thrown out. It's not like he can't try that tactic again. Yeah. Versus all of Kel's successes, where it was not only did she get the attention that she wanted, she got the attention from the guy who was running everything. You know, so not only did she continue on her path towards what she ultimately wanted, it is now being benefited by the fact that, you know, the guy who runs everything is interested in her. You know, the performance and then the gambling, like, also, if she had ended up irritating Joe because of a bad role, her performance and gambling, like, also attracted enough other suitors that Mabel could have pivoted. And I apologize, when I said she, I was talking about Mabel, not Cal.
No, I appreciate that. I knew you were talking about Mabel. You're good.
All right. Well, this, since we were talking about Mabel, who is apparently the strongest person in existence in this
the most powerful. Nothing could stop Mabel.
This is a little bit less of a mechanical question. Through the course of designing and playtesting Roaring Twenties, what is the favorite thing you saw somebody do, or the favorite character that somebody has made in the course of you running this game?
So, now here's the embarrassing part. This is the first time I have played Roaring Twenties.
Oh! Interesting.
You heard it here, folks. Oh my goodness, this is his first time and he designed the game. What?
with these small scale games, I don't really like do a lot of in-depth playtesting. I do enough just to make sure that, like, the mechanics are somewhat satisfying and that they're going to work. But for the most part, because I have limited mechanics and it's a limited scope, you know, especially now with, like, as many different types of solo games I've played with Lonely TTRPG, I'm at the point of comfort where I can, like, read through something and get a good sense of how it's all gonna work together. Like, there, with, you know, just some things that I might need to play through because it feels confusing in the moment. But Roaring Twenties being my first game, I didn't think that much about it. Like, I wrote this in like 24 to 48 hours. In fact, I did most of the layout on my phone on Canva at work.
This explains so much. I'm sorry. I know that sounds really rude, but, like, we were talking about this before we hit record, but when I printed out the rule set and everything, and when I went to hit the print button, the printer was like, we're gonna be printing it so that this much of the page fits in an 8.5 by 11 set, and I'm like, that's cutting off a lot of the rules. yeah, because, like, I'll be honest with you, like, you being like, I love that you're so very mindful about my pronouns and wanting to refer to me in the best way possible and talking about my comfort, but when you were talking about the print settings, there was a part of me that's like,
"You wound me, sir. Please stop hurting me like this."
"You are respectful in everything except what matters, my crit settings."
Kel had you in the first time.
I will say, to the credit of Roaring Twenties, being done by, at the time, a complete amateur, when it came to like setups, and being done completely on your phone during a workday, PDF wise, it looks great.
Oh no, the PDF is marvelous. Mm.
So, I mean, better than anything that I've done as far as like PDF settings go. So brava, I think is how the correct thing to say here, but I am in by no means French.
Bravo for the master.
Bravo, there we go. Kel, you had one more question to ask, and then we're going to round out with Joe's last question.
Yes, my question for you, good sir, is what movies or TV shows or other properties inspired the creation of this game?
Outside of the meme, like I said, just kind of pulling the mishmash of the cultural stereotypes surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of, you know, there's a little bit of Great Gatsby, you know, not necessarily in the futility of the American dream, but everything leading up until that point.
Sure, like the decadence and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. So the decadence, you know, the flappers were definitely inspired by like Great Gatsby in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the G-men coming from like Untouchables, more the Elliot Ness type than Sean Connery's character in that. The Bootleggers is more because of the amusing fun fact of the foundation of NASCAR than any type of media property.
Yeah.
For those in the audience who don't know, NASCAR originally started out because bootleggers were, the bootleggers would be running the alcohol at night, and they would like make their fast cars so they can get away from the cops. But then when Prohibition ended, they had all these fast cars, and it was like, well, what do we do now? I know. Let's make a lot of left turns and drink beer.
Sounds like America. A good time.
And then wait for them to crash.
Yeah. And NASCAR was founded.
Huh. Did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it was just pulling a lot from the cultural zeitgeist and the stereotypical, what do you think of when you think of the 1920s?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think of the flappers, and you think of the speakeasies, and you think of you think of the mobsters who control everything, and the G-men who are going after them, and mm-hmm. the gambler class was definitely because I didn't like having an odd number of classes.
Fair.
It's the amount of classes I had didn't really line up with what I wanted to do for like the stats, and you know, being able to just randomly roll to determine something, like determine your class. So I was like, well, I need something else. Gamblers, because you know,
yeah,
there's always going to be a gambler somewhere.
Absolutely. I mean, can't have 1920s without a lot of gambling. All right, Joe, round us out.
So in the event that you go back and revisit Roaring Twenties, potentially because of Kel's roughing you up about your layout, what other classes would you consider or look at adding if you were going to do so?
Honestly, I would not, like, honestly, if I go back, it's going to be to, like, fix some minor spelling that I saw when rereading the rules for this, and, to fix the layout.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this was designed more to be, like, a light, you know, one-shot, two-shot type mm-hmm. thing. It wasn't designed to be any type of major thing. I don't anticipate anybody deciding to play a 20-30 session campaign with this system.
If they do, kudos.
If you do, please let me know at the socials that I'm sure will follow this episode.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But like, again, at the end of the day, I'm not anticipating any type of grand playthrough of this, so I wouldn't go back and change, like, add any classes or swap any of the classes or anything like that. This is a project. It is completed. It is out in the world, and sure. I learned what I wanted to learn from it. but it is not, like, again, it's not something that I'm going to keep revisiting, and not something that I anticipate an audience to keep revisiting. If for some reason this spawns a massive audience and they have some wants and desires, I might go back and create a Roarin' 22s.
Sure.
But for the most part, I am content with where the game is at. I have another system that I'm working on that is gonna, designed to be larger and more encompassing, like designed to actually be like campaign type thing. Mm-hmm. And like that one would be one that I would refine and update based on things. Mm-hmm. since that's what I would build as my tent pole. This was a learning experience. This was a, how hard is it to actually do this?
Mm-hmm.
And, just to start getting my feet wet and start building a bit of a reputation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can respect the hell out of you being like, I'm going to make this thing and I'm going to be done with this thing. Cause
yep.
That can be really hard for a creative to do, especially when they're just starting out with something.
Yeah. And I don't want to call out any particular mega corporations within the TTRPG space, but there are definitely some games that have been lingered upon far too long and have become over-designed. Not referencing anything in particular. Mm-hmm. Anywho.
I mean, I'm perfectly willing to have that conversation as well. But,
No.
That might be a little bit outside the scope of what you guys are doing today.
We will see after we hit that big red button here in a minute. With that said and done, though, I want to thank you all for coming to this virtual table to join me. Thank you very much for running the game, John, and giving us the rundown of what Roaring Twenties is and what it can do and why it's around. Listeners, thank you for sticking it out and giving a listen to the actual play and Q&A that we hosted here. Be sure mm-hmm. to check out our Discord if you have any questions for us or suggestions on what you want to see soon. But more importantly, John, where can we and our listeners find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at @BDDC_pod. You can also reach me at BlackDragonDungeonCompany@gmail.com. And then if you have any other interests in solo games, then I do have my weekly podcast, Lonely TTRPG, which you can find on YouTube and your favorite podcaster of choice.
Lovely. And links to all of that will always be in the description down below this episode. Make sure to go check it out. To follow us, you can find us at The Fourth Leg Pod on Twitter, or you can email us at thefourthlegpod@gmail.com. You can find links to those down in the description below as well. With all that said and done, thank you very much for listening. We greatly appreciate you supporting us over the last 2 freaking years of doing this podcast. Holy shit.
Hot dang!
And we will see you eventually. Because I think after this episode comes out, we'll be doing season 2 of Shades of Chicago.
I am so unreasonably excited.
But with all of that said and done, thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Fourth Leg. If you enjoyed this or any other episode of the show, be sure to leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you choose to listen. Please reach out to us and let us know what you thought of this episode at The Fourth Leg on Twitter, thefourthlegpod@gmail.com, or by joining our Discord. Links to all of those options will be in the description below. If you'd like to follow Hunter, Joe, or Kelsey's socials, links to those can be found in the description as well. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.